Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, February 11th in the year 2017. So if you'd like to give us a call, you may do so at area code 254-773-1400, which is the same telephone number that all the other talk shows on KTEM use, but you're welcome to use it too, because we share it with them. Only it's really timeshare, because they don't use it at the same time we do.
Right. It's our turn now.
We were going to talk about some things about manufacturing and about tax law. Let's do the manufacturing first, because I think it's fun. Last year, I bought a drone, which, by the way, I'm enjoying when I rarely get to use it, but I do enjoy it rather tremendously. And it became pretty obvious not long after I got the drone that there was a couple of parts that really should have been made for the drone that had not been made for the drone, like a protecting thing for the camera so that when you bump into something, it doesn't break the camera, and a sunshield for the camera. And, of course, trying to fit a sunshield and a protective casing around it historically would have taken engineers on this end, look at it and say, oh, yes, we really need to do that.
Right.
And they'd very carefully design it, and they would test it, and they would get it all the specification exactly right. And then they would bid. They look for bids from China or someplace to manufacture this new part. And somebody would have to put a machine together that would do all of this stuff, and it would take quite a while. Well, within 2 weeks of the time this new drone came on the market, the parts that needed to go on there that were not manufactured by the manufacturer of the drone suddenly popped up on Amazon. Now, how did they do that?
3D printing.
That's right. And the bottom line to it is somebody looked at it and said, that thing is really needed. There were a lot of comments and blogs and so on. Somebody who has the ability to program a 3D printer did the calculations, figured out exactly what was needed, printed one up. Probably didn't work the first time they did it, so they printed it up a little differently the next time around. They finally got it to where it worked perfectly, and so within 2 weeks, a part is being manufactured. So when I ordered the part, it didn't arrive overnight. It didn't arrive in 2 days. It actually took about a week to arrive, and the reason it took about a week to arrive is because the guy had to print it in order to send it to me, and he's getting a swarm of orders for this part.
He may have had one 3D printer that is printing, and they're not really fast. I mean, if it's a small part, it could take an hour. And if he's got his 3D printer going full speed and he's got 15, then
he's
got to be near it still.
An hour, yeah.
And not an hour, 15 a day, more like if he's got.
But I'm saying he probably went out and bought some more 3D printers when he got swamped with all the orders that probably
in.
And you know, we used to talk about the fact that software developers could set up like Apple did in a garage and develop something that would change the world. right now, you don't even have to go to the garage. People are probably setting up 3D printers in their bedrooms to manufacture things that previously would have taken many man hours and a huge capital investment and building buildings and all that stuff that went into it. That's the change that's coming in society today. Things right. are happening faster. And this is a key, really, 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 to if you're have an opinion on what's going on with foreign trade and all that, is really understand that any job that gets sent overseas will be probably replaced with a robot within a very few years, or the job will cease to exist.
Yeah, that job is not coming back. That's the underline here. That's if we could underline a word or a phrase in there, the jobs are not coming back.
There's new jobs going to be available.
Yeah, new jobs are going to be there. This is as clear as I can make it. One of the things that is happening here is there was a time when people thought it was absolutely absurd that anyone would need a personal computer.
I remember when the CEO of IBM said, why in the world would a person want a personal computer? What are they going to do, keep recipes on it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do. We keep recipes on it. We keep a lot of things on our personal computers. The concept now of not having access to the internet and not using a computer, and by computer, I mean your phone, too. If you don't have a television, you use your computer or your phone, and the televisions are actually more computer than television these days. So the concept of a personal computer, we didn't even realize how personal we were going to get with these computers. The same is being said right now about 3D printers. People go, oh, that might be nice to, we could play with it. You know, I'll print a toy out or something. In the future, and not that far in the future, mm-hmm. because these things happen faster and faster, everybody's going to have a 3D printer. We're not even going to call them that anymore. I don't know what we're going to call them, but they're not going to be a 3D printer. That's a mouthful. It's going to be something else. And basically, if you need something to put your food in overnight in your refrigerator, you'll hit a button and it will print it out and you will put it in the food. You put the food in there and you put it in the refrigerator. And when you're done with it, you may not even do like you eat it 2 days later. You take that container and you toss it in a bin, and it's a bin that recycles it for you into the raw stuff to do the next prints. It's not, if you think about waste management, if you think about a lot of other areas, I mean, you basically go, you put it in a dishwasher. The dishwasher takes those things, as a special dishwasher, washes it off, and then puts it into the recycle, which just gets the 3D printer ready to do its next thing. And thinking about storage space, thinking about customization of anything that you want. There's already a massive database out there called Thingiverse. I highly recommend people go out there just to see what's out there. There's a bunch of 3D models of things that you can print. They're open source. That's the tiniest tip of the iceberg. Because the future is going to be all about that. It's kind of like everything else that we've done. When we went from blacksmiths making all of the tools, every tool was custom and handmade. And it would fit you. If you got a good blacksmith or you were the blacksmith, that tool was going to be what you wanted. Then we went industrial. We had removable and replaceable parts. We have this great big innovation. Everybody could afford to have a tool. Instead of having a custom-made tool that the blacksmith had to get all of the pieces, all of the raw materials, and do all that work himself, now anybody could have it at a much lower price, but it wasn't customized.
Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum is Japan ran into a declining available skilled worker population a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
On the assembly lines. And as a result, automobile factories in Japan have very, very few people in them. And yet they make automobiles that they sell in the United States. Now, Toyota makes a lot of automobiles here, and they use a lot of workers here. And there's a lot of reason behind that. But the issue is it's getting harder and harder and harder for Toyota or anybody else to find people to work on an assembly line doing the same thing over and over again, year in and year out, and keep their vehicles competitive. And you can look Japan and you can see there is where you can see the future occurring right there. And it's one of those things that no matter how much we love to bring back people making $95,000 a year for bolting on fenders because they've been working in Detroit a long time, it's not going to happen.
There's a piece of American folk tale. And I'm trying to think, who was it? What's her name? Rosie. Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter, yeah.
Rosie the Riveter.
World War II.
You know, this calling up of people who had not been in the workforce before,
mm-hmm.
bringing them into the workforce and putting them to work doing things that were absolutely necessary. We needed to rivet our ships and our tanks and all kinds of other things.
And our airplanes
so that we could fight the war. And all of our men were overseas. So how were we going to do this? So Rosie became the poster child. She's, you know, muscle flexed as she goes out there, hair tied back, sleeves rolled up. She's going to work. Those rivets are not done with human hands anymore. They're just not done that way.
Robo the Riveter.
It's Robo the Riveter. And Robo is doing it better, faster, with less rest and less than Rosie was. This is that next boom in our economy going forward. It's like bringing workforce in that didn't exist before. If we are talking about Rosie's job is already taken by a robot. It's not coming back, and I can't underline that enough.
And this is coming to an automobile near you in the near future. The major automobile manufacturers, Ford, GM,
Chrysler, Fiat, Waymo, Tesla.
They are investing.
Mercedes, BMW, we'll just keep going. Go ahead.
Both Ford and GM have recently announced each investments in excess of $1 billion in purchasing companies that are building self-driving cars. And when you have General Motors and Ford in competition, and their target date now is 2021 to have self-driving cars on the highways.
That's 5 years.
I think you can reasonably expect it's going to happen. It's no longer some wild theory that's out there.
It's safer, and much, much safer.
It's going to be like automatic transmissions. It's going to be like anything else that we see, and it's going to happen fairly quickly. I would say within a decade, the majority of automobiles on the highway will be driving themselves.
Now, that's going to clear up a lot of traffic jams mm-hmm. because the rubbernecking concept goes out the window.
And that's
don't
major,
rubberneck out the window. By
a
the way.
Major, major change coming down the road. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do because I've got a pickup I fully intended to keep for the rest of my life, and it's not self-driving.
One of the big companies out there, and it's probably not going to be the only one. There are going to be a lot. Are custom jobs to refit existing vehicles.
Well, I guess that's what eventually I'll have to do probably because I don't want to get rid of that truck. Is because I know they've refitted 18-wheelers to drive at least on the interstates.
Right, and most of the original work on self-driving cars was refitting existing. Waymo is the Alphabet company that used to be Google that's doing the same thing for Alphabet. And right now they're refitting existing cars. They have their own model that they started into, but they realized that they didn't need to reinvent the wheel. As it were. So
reinvent the car.
They just needed to put the LIDAR and radar and the extra sensing
concepts on
there and then have a go.
I strongly suspect we will see sections of highway, lanes in highways where you can, we'll be down to maybe one lane where you can actually drive your own vehicle.
Right.
And just get ready for that. You may not like it. It may be awkward for you. But I can't imagine it not coming because the alternative is to build much more highway, much wider highway. And since it's taken 15 years now and we're still not done with the interstate between Austin and Waco, yeah, I think changing the cars is more efficient than changing the highways.
Right. The there's a movie came out in the 90s called Demolition Man, Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes, and they're brought forward into the future.
Oh,
they've been put in
cryostasis
right. for punishment, and then, so they're brought forward into the future because Wesley Snipes breaks out of prison somehow. Somebody's been controlling his mind and making him into a killing machine while he's been cryostasis, and they pull him out as the threat. And in order to fight that threat, they have to pull Sylvester Stallone, who was the hard-bitten Clint Eastwood-style
detective
who was misunderstood, and all of his arrests ended with big explosions and so on. And so they put him in prison because one of those explosions may have hurt civilians. And well, they pull him out of cryostasis to chase around. And one of the
right.
things that he has trouble with is he gets in a car and it's driving itself. And he doesn't like that. He's like, I'm not letting a machine drive my car. I'm going to drive my car. And he goes into manual mode. And I think it's quite humorous because they go into manual mode and there's this high-speed chase, very good 90s era high-speed chase, where most of the cars are avoiding them because they're self-driving as they're zipping through traffic. But it ends in a massive accident, which is why they don't let manual driving.
Right.
And anyway, the concept there, it's not a new concept. We've known this was coming. This is something that's been coming a very long time. We've looked at it since computers were first thought of. Turing, who came up with the machine that broke the Enigma in World War II, he came up with the Turing machine and later the test that said, when is it self-aware, when is it an artificial intelligence, said computers will be driving our vehicles and flying our airplanes. And
well, they're already flying our airplanes.
They've been flying our airplanes a long time. So to think that this is a big thing and to think that we should be surprised about eventually not being allowed to drive our car on the highway, you won't be allowed to drive your car on the highway. This is one of those statistics that people are unaware of. They completely ignore. We killed about 38,000 Americans last year on the highways. If a terrorist attack had killed 38,000 young and otherwise healthy people, children, adults, old people, doesn't matter, 38,000 people died. It's one of the largest leaders of death, causes of death in the United States. It is the leading cause of death for people under the age of 14. This is far worse than leukemia or heart disease or anything else for child mortality.
And we have the technology coming that could virtually eliminate that.
Right. We haven't looked at those statistics and talked about those statistics because there's just the way life is. It's kind of like before we had a polio vaccine. You may have said this is bad that polio is there, but it's just what's happening and people get it and they die. And isn't that sad? But we now look back at that and say, with the vaccine, how could you not give that vaccine to kids? And when we're looking at driving, we're going to look back on ourselves and we're going to have people asking us, did you really drive a car? That's so dangerous.
Well, I think there'll probably be places you can actually go manually drive
sure.
a car, but you have to sign all kind of waivers.
Yeah, just like
just
you can
like
ride
you horses.
Yeah, you can go to a riding club or a driving club.
They'll make you wear helmets and, you know, protective gear and because driving a car is inherently dangerous.
It is inherently dangerous, and we all know that. Otherwise, we wouldn't have defensive driving classes for people that speed, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't issue citations for people going too fast. We wouldn't need training to do it. If it's not dangerous.
Let's change subjects here a little bit.
Let's do it.
And the subject I want to go to is I think there is probably going to be changes in the tax law.
I believe so too.
And I think the income tax code is going to be rewritten, probably pretty much scrapped and rewritten. How it's going to come out is a big question. I really, the market is kind of priced in right now, or pricing in, the concept that corporate income taxes will come down to about 20%, the personal income taxes will be dropped. They'll be reduced. One of the things in the Republicans' bill, the Republicans' concept, which seems to be the leading concept, is also individualized deductions will be capped at $200,000 per couple. And that may sound ridiculous until you realize that in some cases, if you have a really massive loss, it might be more than that. But there's a whole series of things that are in this thing that are moving parts. The key here, and we've talked about this before on the radio program here, and we've talked about it in the newsletter, and we're going to keep talking about it, is if you cut taxes to corporations and you cut taxes to individuals and you cut taxes across the board, you can whittle around the edges by reducing personal deductions to a cap of $200,000. I think there's very few people who deduct more than $200,000. At that point, you still have a huge decrease in revenue from income tax. And we expect the government to spend more money at the same time, because the other promise that has been made by the president is we're going to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. I don't know that we're going to spend $1 trillion in infrastructure. We're going to spend something because we need to do so. And there's a lot of things need to be fixed. And the other thing is that he's going to beef up defense. And defense is one of the bigger budget items right now. And if you really want more defense, you got to spend a lot more money, because you wind up with more retirees and more medical costs. It is really a complicated game. But the promise that has come out of Congress and out of the president is we're going to raise spending and cut taxes. Now,
that's not long-term feasible.
Right. Well, somehow you've got to cut some more. You got to get some more revenue in, because people are not going to want their Social Security cut, and the president promised he wasn't going to cut it.
You can't cut the Medicare side of things. You can't cut the prescription drug care benefit. Their defense, we're going to spend more on.
So somewhere, moron?
It's not moronic to do that.
Did you just call me a moron?
Not intentionally.
Okay. The current plan in the House of Representatives, which is where tax bills have to originate, is we have this BAT. We have a BAT,
which is
a border adjustment tax of 20%. So anything that's imported into the United States gets a 20%. What it really boils down to is a corporation cannot deduct the cost of something they imported, but they don't pay taxes on the profits on exports. Well, there's a huge difference there. And it really is going to amount to really a big increase in taxation. Now, the taxation will be on corporations that import, and some corporations will get hit really, really hard, and some will get hit less hard. Some will make a profit from it. But it's still going to be very, very disruptive. And as a result, here's the practical thing you can take away from this. Whatever happens is going to be disruptive. And some companies are going to do very well under a tax law change, and some companies are going to do horribly under a tax law change and probably go out of business, because so much of what's done economically at the corporate and even at the personal level is done because of the tax law that we have now. And I don't know if you remember what happened. Well, maybe remembering is not good. 1987. New tax law went into effect, the Tax Reform Act of 1986, a complete rewrite. We had a massive stock market crash that year, 30%. We recovered from it pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was back recovered within a very short period of time, but it was a big crash.
But the real estate collapse that followed that tax law change
went on
for a decade.
Right. If you live in Texas, we were the state hardest hit by that change in tax law. The real estate tax credits that were available just disappeared right in the middle of a big boom in getting those credits in Texas. It caused what we now refer to as the savings and loan disaster. The Resolution Trust Corporation had to be developed to fix it by George H.W. Bush, and it wound up giving a surplus when those lands were sold back to on the market to President Clinton.
But there are a lot of individual investors who invested in the wrong thing in the old tax scheme, whose were sold investments based on the fact, look how profitable this will be, and it'll be a piece of cake, and there's really no risk to you.
It's based on the taxes.
Yeah, but the point is, tax laws change. And in this case, they changed in a lot. There, matter of fact, I still know some people who are still hurting from that tax law change that occurred in 1987. They still are in the position where they've got losses that they're still trying to write off on their existing taxes from the huge losses they took all the way back then. So this is the advice, and it's educational advice, not personal advice. And that is that be very cautious in your investment right now. Don't go for something that somebody's trying to sell you that looks like it's going to have they promise a high return. The biggest casualty that I can see coming in any tax law change is going to be the high yield we used to call junk. Now they no longer call it junk bonds.
We still call it junk bonds.
It's time for them to collapse again because nobody thinks they're risky. The other thing, and this is going to be hard, if we do the BAT, there's been several economic analyses about who gets hurt, who gets helped. It ain't good for Texas, folks. Texas will be the hardest, one of, if not the hardest hit states, if everything that's imported from Mexico, which we are the gateway and a lot of companies exist in Texas to buy relatively inexpensive parts from Mexico, assemble them here, and sell them in the United States.
Right.
Those companies are operating on a relatively thin margin. A lot of them have issued junk bonds, and many of them, maybe even most of them, will go out of business and start laying people off. So this could be another case where a conservative gets elected president, Ronald Reagan in the previous case. The Congress goes conservative on the tax law, simplifies it, does exactly what we asked them to do, and Texas takes it right between the eyes.
Now, Texas recovered not long after that, and long term, the tax law changes were really good for Texas.
But a lot of people lost money along the way.
Right. If you have been making decisions, and this is the underline of what we're saying here, if you make your decisions based in your investments or anything else that are long-term decisions based on current tax law, you need to leave yourself some big wiggle room because tax laws will change. And if, you know, in Texas, we may take it on the chin again. And again, it may be long-term really good for Texas. But if we're not aware that we're going to take it on the chin before we get better than we are today, we're going to make some mistakes.
And here's a big issue. Nobody really has a solid grip on what the secondary, tertiary, quaternary, and quaternary effects will be. And I know those are big words. What it boils down to is when one thing blows up, you may not be invested in that and you may have nothing to do with it. But then the next thing that was dependent upon it that you didn't know was dependent upon it all of a sudden collapses because of that. And then there's yet a third thing out there that was dependent upon the second thing. And we just didn't have any clue. For example, I don't think anybody in Washington or in the economic world seriously considered that allowing Lehman Brothers to fail would cause one of, if not the largest insurance holding company in the United States to go bankrupt.
Well,
AIG.
There were a lot of people that said that would happen, but a lot of people didn't believe it.
So
a lot of people in Washington simply did not believe it. And so the first TARP bill didn't get passed. Lehman Brothers failed. It put AIG on the rocks even more than it had been.
And so,
and I don't mean that in the whiskey term. I meant that in the more like the sailing
right.
terms.
Because so,
one side on the rocks might be a good thing. And I don't.
So this is a time to be well diversified and relatively conservative. For example, with the new tax law in whatever form it takes, there are two very strong schools of argument on the price of gold.
All right, these are schools of argument?
Yes.
I need to go to these schools.
Well, yeah.
I like schools of argument.
There's groups of economists that said, oh, this will cause gold to rise because the economy will stutter and stumble and the price of gold will go up because people go there when the economy stutters and stumbles. And there's another group that says, oh, no, this will cause the price of gold to fall through the floor because a lot of people who bought gold in India and China will suddenly find themselves hit with a 20% increase in their cost of exporting stuff, and as a result,
they're going to need extra cash.
They will be liquidating their gold. So,
and that has a bigger impact on the gold market right now than the American holdings.
The fact is, nobody knows. So the one thing you can look at is if your investments are based in what are called value companies, And those value companies have solid earnings. And by the way, they generally have very low balance sheet loans. Because another thing that's in that tax bill is corporations lose the ability to deduct the interest on loans. So one of the things that I think probably would happen very quickly when all this money comes flooding back in, because they allow the companies to bring money back into the United States in without a big tax.
And that's going to, there's going to be a tax, but it's not going to be as big as it is now. That's going to be a big boost to revenue.
And since they have ultra low interest rates on their loans, they may just go in and pay off those loans, which will have we're still trying to figure out what that do to the bond market.
Well, that's going to put a lot of money back in circulation. That's one of the big things that's going to happen there. If money comes back into circulation at that high speed, we may see the Federal Reserve start raising interest rates a lot faster than they expected to.
The key here is don't make assumptions on the margins. Don't buy something that looks like it's going to make a lot of money because it made a lot of money last year and it's going to make a lot of money in the future. And I'll give you another example here, and we got to do commercials. Nobody that I know of, and I've looked hard, forecast that the election of Donald Trump would cause the emerging markets index to jump 7% this year up. Matter of fact, all of the wisdom that I read from all of the prognosticators said that with Donald Trump's proposed restrictions on imports and the House of Representatives plan proposed putting a tax on imports, that the countries that export to us, mainly emerging market countries, would see their share values fall. And instead, they are the leading of all the asset classes we track. So far this year, they're up 7%, which is the most.
And I'll tell you why that is, by the way. There seems to be a lot of people out there that are rumbling and saying, what is going on here? This isn't what I expected. I'm going to tell you something, and I said this in, I guess it was September.
He's going to tell.
If we see a big run-up in the dollar, expect to see those emerging markets countries boom. The reason is very obvious when stated like that. Our dollar is really strong right now, which is not good for our exports, but it's really good for our imports. And who sends a lot of stuff to us? Well, emerging markets countries, when they receive a dollar, it's had a larger run-up against, for instance, the Thai baht or the Mexican peso, or you go down the list of currencies out there that aren't the major world currency, which the dollar has really caught up with a lot of them and in some cases passed them. When you're talking about emerging markets currencies, the fact that we are paying less today with our dollars for the same product. So we say
our dollar is buying more.
Right. So, well, they may have lowered the cost just to stay competitive. So say we were paying $2 for something and they lowered the cost to $1.75. The dollar has risen a lot more than 12.5%, which is the discount we got. The dollar may have doubled. They're getting paid very large amounts more than what they were being paid for the same product, which means that they're hiring more people and they're increasing their...
Right, and in many cases, they're cutting their costs.
Right, they're cutting their costs, hiring more people, and making more profits because of the dollar. So there's a currency issue that gets thrown in there that when we're only talking about the border adjustment, which, by the way, Congress and the president are not in agreement over.
Right. But either a tariff or a border adjustment.
Whatever you want to call it.
No matter how it comes in, and I presume that since it's the only way I can see possibly right now, other than a huge borrowing, to pay for the tax cuts. If it comes to pass, economists across the board are only disagreeing on how much the dollar will rise against foreign currencies. In other words, 25% seems to be kind of the consensus among economists. The dollar will rise 25% against the euro, against the yuan, which means they will fall. And this is the contradiction. We're supposed to seal off, make imports more expensive. But the president's also complaining that the Chinese currency is too cheap.
Well, it's been manipulated, right.
It is going to get a lot cheaper.
Because the dollar is going to be deflated in the foreign market. Not here, but in the foreign market, the dollar is going to be worth tremendously more, which means that the president, by doing this, would have the exact opposite effect on the yuan that he's disagreeing with.
Oh, which brings up another subject before we do commercials. The Chinese have cut their currency, their U.S. dollar reserves in the last several years have gone down by about 25%, 25 to 33%, depending on how you look at it. And they are
external holdings of treasuries have dropped drastically.
Selling treasury bonds, the thing that everybody was afraid of. Why are they selling treasury bonds? Because they're buying their own currency, trying to keep the price up against the dollar because it keeps trying to fall because people are trying to get money out of China. And they, by the way, shut down Bitcoin. If you're a Bitcoin investor and you're working through the biggest exchanges, which are in China, well, guess what? You can't make any withdrawals now.
They've been doing this for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. They've been slowly selling off U.S. treasuries so that they can buy up yuan. And this is the opposite of what the president is claiming they're doing with their currency. Because there have been times in the past, so the president's absolutely correct about this, there have been times in the past that they have weakened their own currency against ours. And every time they've done that, Clinton objected to it, H.W. Bush objected to it, W. Bush objected to it. Obama objected to it.
But now they're doing the opposite.
They're doing the opposite now because so much of their currency is leaving the country. They're over debt. They have way too much debt, and the state-owned banks are going to be run by the state forever, so they never have to really collect the debt. But if they ever had to, all of those debts would make those banks not functional.
It's important to remember that the Chinese don't just create products to sell to us out of thin air. For instance, they don't have a lot of iron ore. They buy it largely from Africa, and they use dollars to do so. If their currency were to drop, those dollars would become more expensive to them. And this is a little complicated economics.
The raw stuff, the raw iron, the raw everything that they're buying would become a lot more expensive for them.
And so they don't want their currency to go down. They want it to stay where it is. And they're spending a lot of dollars buying their own currency. Now, this is the interesting thing. You would expect then to see a big move in interest rates as they sold those things off. You would expect to see that the price of the treasuries would decline, which means interest rates would go up, but they haven't gone up.
Because Americans are buying.
Right. And it's a complicated world out there. And right now, again, sticking with a well-diversified, value-oriented set of investments is the only thing we can tell people to do. You say people say conservatives, that means go to bonds. Sometimes it doesn't in this case.
Do not go to bonds to be conservative unless it's very, very short term, very short duration bonds right now.
But we're entering into a period of uncertainty, volatility, and stress. And speaking of uncertainty, volatility, and stress,
let's play some commercials. Yeah. All right. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join us, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we got about 10 minutes left on this Saturday, February 11th, so if you'd like to give us a call. Hey,
phone number is 254-773-1400.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Hey, there was a little blurb that came out. Russia charged two cybersecurity experts at the FSB, the country's intelligence agency, and an executive at Kaspersky Labs, an antivirus software firm, with treason. And they were all charged at the same time, and they're all related to each other. And this is what's really interesting. Something's going on there. Kaspersky is operated and facilitated day in and day out by people who are part of the Russian intelligence reserve forces.
What we will tell you is it's Kaspersky years ago made a big point in its publicity of saying that the majority of the programmers at Kaspersky Labs were in the reserve military of Russia. And we got a pretty good idea what the Reserve Military of Russia is going to use a bunch of programmers for. So
what it boils down to is Kaspersky Labs is next door to the FSB, which used to be the KGB. It's actually in a building that used to be part of the KGB. And if you have Kaspersky antivirus,
you might want to choose another antivirus software.
You basically are saying, we are going to let everything, I'm going to let everything in my computer be very clear and very well known to the Russian intelligence service.
Now, if you don't have a problem with that because you're not doing anything that they should care about, then it's not a big deal. It's a free service. But if you have some degree of discomfort of them knowing financial information or email information on you, then I would suggest using a different software company for your antivirus.
Right. I'm not saying that right now Kaspersky is using your computer to hack into something in the United States. All I'm saying is that the cozy relationship between a country that probably ranks number one among our potential enemies in the world and a company that has access to many, many, many personal computers in the United States is a little discomforting.
Yeah. So in the middle of that, don't hear us being horribly down on Russia. Although we recognize Russia may not have our interests in mind, they have theirs. China will not allow any governmental official to use any of the more recent versions of Windows from Microsoft. Because Microsoft works with the U.S. government in many areas, and the government has less restrictions on how it monitors people in other countries than how it monitors us here. So the government of China has just basically said, no, we're not going to use a Microsoft operating system, or at least none of the new ones.
And
so I'm saying that because our interests and those of Russia or China are probably not aligned completely, particularly not at the governmental level.
We tend to forget these things, but you recall we had something called Stuxnet that was inside the Iranian nuclear centrifuge software that basically delayed their development of a nuclear weapon.
It's pretty clearly written by the American intelligence services.
Either Israel or the United States or two of us got together and we wrote this bug to do this.
Who was the firm that found it again?
It was Kaspersky who found it and published the report on it.
Isn't that interesting? Who was it that's funded and imported the vast majority of the equipment that the Iranians used to develop nuclear weapons?
It is Russia.
Oh, yeah. So keep that in mind.
So it really boils down to the fact that if you use Kaspersky to protect your computer, you may be protecting the computer from some hackers. But even if at this given moment in time, Kaspersky is not actively using your computer for something that's bad for the United States,
they have the ability in moment's notice.
In a moment, start doing so, and I'll assure you the...
All it takes is the FSB coming next door and saying, hey, you're in the reserves. We outrank you, and we need this information.
And Bloomberg, this is not just us. In 2015, Bloomberg published an extensive article, which they've never retracted, despite the fact that Kaspersky has protested. And Kaspersky, by the way, did not sue them over it.
No.
Saying that they are in cahoots with the Russian intelligence service.
They didn't sue them because that would require the evidence to be brought forward in court.
And they could have sued them if it was false, which is an interesting little concept. By the way, I do applaud something. Melania Trump is suing the Daily Mail, I think it is, in London.
I think everyone should sue the Daily Mail.
And the Daily Mail published last year an article claiming they had evidence that she was formerly a call girl.
Escort of some kind.
They refused to retract it.
She sued them.
Until she sued them. And when she sued them, they suddenly retracted and said they really don't have any evidence that indicated that was so. And the left wing is hammering her for saying that it's going to cost her money. What is she doing making money as the first lady? Let me tell you, folks, every denizen of the White House, when they get out, has the opportunity to make a lot of money if they have any kind of reputation left whatsoever in speaking engagements.
Even if they don't.
Selling stuff.
Jimmy Carter left the White House under not the greatest, brightest of situations. He's up there in many cases, in many people's minds, as an ineffective president. And that man has made a lot of money since he's been in the White House, just being himself, because he was a president.
Yeah, and so I think finally Britain's freedom of the press rules are much stronger than ours are. You can say almost anything in their press, but in the United States, if it's out-and-out libel, if there's no evidence to support it, and you damage a person's reputation or attempt to do so, you got a different standard. So she sued him in New York, where they have an office. And interesting enough, the day she filed the suit,
they suddenly retracted
the story.
Yeah, it's one of those things about libel suits. You shouldn't make the lawsuit unless you're positive the information that they're posting about you is false, because you're basically requiring them to put forth evidence saying how bad you are or that the story is true. The Trumps are using the same attorney that Hulk Hogan used sue Gawker and put Gawker out of business.
And I suspect they're going to be paying – $1.5 million to them is probably peanuts anyway.
I think it was $150 million.
$150 million? That's better. I like that better.
Move the decimal point.
Decimal point. You know, a zero here, a zero there.
Those zeros, well, they don't add up. They add up.
Yeah, exponentially.
Zero plus zero is zero, but the zeros sure do add up over time.
When you add a zero to a number, it goes up by a factor of 10.
Right. It's just one of those weird things about math.
I like that. So if you add zero to 100, it becomes 1,000.
Yes. How did that happen?
That's
just added nothing to it.
Well, you have been listening to the person. Well, maybe you haven't been listening.
I haven't been listening. Have you been listening?
And we are in the business of assisting people in investing their money and managing things like that.
On a fiduciary basis.
And there's a couple of things that we'll just kind of throw in here at the end, unless Jake has an objection to this. And that is, it is really important to have a plan.
Oh, I object.
I figured you would.
Yes, and no, I have no objection to having a plan.
It's really important to have broad diversification based on asset allocation. And I think it is quite important, not vital, but quite important, to have a non-conflicted advisor who isn't working for a corporation who's paying him to sell certain products.
Or her.
Him or her, yes. And I think those things are very important. And it'd be really interesting to find out what people think about that. You can give us we have our emails are out there. It's either Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. We'd love to have feedback on what we presented, because we don't even know if anybody's listening. We did have one caller.
Yes.
So that one caller, we know one person was listening at least part of the time.
Either that, or they just called a random number to ask an economics question, which we all do occasionally.
But it's we think we're in pretty good shape in the economy. We think we're in pretty good shape in the market. We don't anticipate anything economic on the horizon that's going to eat things up. The political risk is there. It's Amazon just published and said the big risk is tax law.
Tax and trade law.
And they are.
Yeah, it's a big risk for everybody.
And it could all – everything could turn out wonderfully, or it could blow up or somewhere in between.
Could be a big benefit. Could be a big risk. We don't know.
But hold your course if you've got a good course set. If you're speculating, you're in dangerous territory right now, because you're speculating about some things or you're being aggressive about some things when the future is liable to change everything quite a lot in the economic world. So have a good conservative course. Have some good advice. Be careful about what you're paying for it. And I think the important thing is to sail through this without reacting. And it's time to give all our end of show stuff.
Right. The reaction thing is the biggest problem. And the investors, you react to the wrong things, because that's what we want to react to.
And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail on the weekend, voices to answering the phone during the week, 254-947-1111.
You can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, as he's just said, at tpwc.com or thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can email us through there, read our podcasts.
Listen
to our newsletter. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.